BBC Radio 6 Music documentaries, telling the stories in music that matter. Now, this is a BBC Radio 6 Music documentary.
Seen a blind man cross the road, trying to make the other side. Ever seen a young girl growing old, trying to make herself a bride? So what becomes of you, my love? Your granddad had to sweat so you could buy, baby. Once I was a young man, and all I thought I had to do was smile.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to the first time on 6 Music. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. My guest this week is best known for being an actor, comedian and director, but music has always been integral to his life and his work. Firstly, he enjoyed a short-lived pop career, but you can also see his passion and understanding of the power of music in the TV shows he created, like The Office and Extras. And now he's brought his most famous creation to the big screen and the pop charts. My guest this week is Ricky Gervais. As David Brent makes his return in the new film Life on the Road, his creator sits down to discuss his own musical influences and passions. From a youth growing up in Reading, obsessed by Roxy Music and Cat Stevens and Simon & Garfunkel, to the impact of the Old Grey Whistle Test, and of course, seeing David Bowie for the first time. We also discuss his short-lived new romantic band, Siona Dancing, how he used some of his favourite bands in his TV series and films, his passion for Radiohead, meeting and working with David Bowie, and of course, David Brent's soon-to-be legendary band, Foregone Conclusion. But I started by asking Ricky, as I did with all my guests, when was he first aware of music?
Radio was always on in our house. I had older brothers and sisters. So at five, and I know it sort of doesn't count, but it all goes in, five, six, seven, eight, I was listening to Bob Dylan, Neil Young, Beatles and the Stones, all that stuff. Plus, my mum's collection was things like Jim Reeves, Frankie Lane, you know, country and western, that sort of real first time round easy, Sinatra. That's why Brent croons a little bit. It all goes in. It all goes in.
Because that's a very strong opening selection of influences.
Well, yeah, because my next brother to me is 11 years older, my sister's 13 years older, and my oldest brother's 14 years older than me. So that's, you know, and I acquired their old records. So my first possessions were these old 45s, sometimes with the middle missing, where I think they'd nicked them from jukeboxes. And it was like, I remember the first track I really played to death, I just loved it for some reason, was Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan. That's what I was singing along to as like an 8 year old.
That's an incredibly cool foundation.
Well, it's luck, isn't it? It's luck. And obviously I didn't appreciate it as much as I do now. you know, I didn't know the importance. I didn't know what he was singing about in Hurricane, and, you know? I just liked his voice, I liked the tune, and I just liked it. You know, it's what you're exposed to, isn't it?
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you, people call, say, beware, doll, you're bound to fall. You thought they were all kidding you. You know you only used to get juice in it. Nobody's ever taught you how to live out on the street, and now you're gonna have to get
So I had all those old influences, and I suppose the first things that I thought were mine, that I owned loving, was folk people. Like Cat Stevens was my first discovery.
What was the Cat Stevens record?
Yeah, the first one I had, and I asked my sister to buy it for me because I love Cat Stevens, but I had to grab it when I could, listen to... I didn't have any money. I didn't have any pocket money. I'm not whinging. I didn't even know I was poor, you know. But I remember I asked for Teaser and the Firecat for my birthday.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never. I never wanted water once, no, never, never, never. Listen to my words, but they fall far below. I let my music take me where my heart wants to go. I swam upon the devil's lake, but never, 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 never. I'll never make the same mistake. Never, never, never.
Cat Stevens, Simon and Garfunkel, they were mine. They were the ones that I decided by myself that I absolutely loved for some reason at sort of, I suppose, 12, 13, 14. I still like pop, you know, I still like things in the charts that were around. The thing that stayed with me the longest that I loved to be proud of, liked the music, and wore it as a badge of honour was Bowie. So that's the progression, really. It was Sinatra, Elvis, Beatles and the Stones, Bob Dylan, into David Bowie. That is my lineage. But the first record I bought for myself when I was... It was 73, so I was either 12 or 13, was Stranded by Roxy Music. And I went on the bus to the Butts Centre in Reading, went up the escalator to this really cool little record shop. I can't remember what it was called, but it was the coolest record shop. It was only sort of young people in there, you know? It was, you know, there was... It was like Mum's Not Allowed. And it was like lava lamps and people with hair and beards and tie-dye T-shirts. And I'm in there, it was like 12, 13, and I bought Stranded. And I just looked at it. I just looked at it and played it. I looked at the vinyl. I knew it all. I knew all the who played what. I knew the engineer's name, right? So, and from going in that shop, I was so proud of myself. They had, like, those coloured light bulbs, and there was a black light bulb. And I said, I wanted that for my bedroom, right? And I put a black light bulb in my bedroom. And my mum was going, Rick, I can't see to clean up in here. She went, it's ridiculous, all right? She said, for all I know, and this is how she always gets me. They always win, mums. She went, for all I know, there might be spiders up there. And that light bulb came out. Right, get it out. Okay, fair enough, good point. Back to normal lighting. And I also remember, right, so that's all the songs I loved, right? So there's my things, right? Yeah. But I was a normal 12, 13 year old, and I used to get this magazine called Looking. It was like a cross between TV Times and Smash Hits, and they'd give away posters, right, that you put on the wall. So I loved all these great things, but because I had no money, I was at the mercy of what poster Looking gave away. And I remember two of the posters that I put around my wall, right? But it's so arbitrary because they were free and looking. One was Slade, which was good.
Fine.
Good early. Yeah. And it was early days because they were skinheads.
Yeah.
So it was that time, right? And the other one was Christopher Lee as Dracula. So my bedroom was a 13-year-old, black light bulb, Slade and Christopher Lee. I invented goth.
What's the Roxy track we should play off that record?
A Street Life I loved when I first heard it. I'd never heard a track like it. And I knew uncool people that I played it to. They said, it's not even a tune. The synth's all out. I thought, you idiot. You idiot. You're not my friend anymore.
Just to take it.
We just saw Bob Harris downstairs. And I was going to ask you about if you had, because, you know, people have their Top of the Pops, or maybe these days their CD UK moment. I don't know what the equivalent is. Did you have a TV moment? It was watching a band and
I just thought of two then. You saw me lose my cool a bit with whispering Bob Harris, didn't you? But it was him that asked for a selfie, and I was blown away. So I said, yeah, he's amazing. He is one of the last living legends. And I'll Grow Whistle Test is the greatest music show of all time. It was remarkable. As soon as that started, down, I got a little adrenaline rush. It was BBC Two. I just thought...
It's a bit late.
I'm so cool. I'm so cool watching this, right? I just thought the bands performed to just no audience. They just did it. They just did a song. I saw so many great bands on there. Patti Smith, Blondie. Another moment I just remembered, which I think was probably the most life-changing moment that spilled into, was seeing Bowie do Heroes on Mark, which was a Mark Bolan's TV show. And I just went quiet. I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, it put my world in colour. Just seeing him, how he looked and what he did and what he was singing about, I just thought, this is it now. That's it. That's done now. I don't need anything else now.
Music. I don't need any more music, because I've got the best song there is now.
I know. It's just, yeah, so...
Without going on about the Bowie thing, which I guess is something you've been talking about a lot, because you've become kind of woven into part of his story. As that kid watching Heroes or buying Aladdin Sane and seeing that cover, and now thinking, well, I'm a part of the thread of how people think about a certain part
of
life.
Well, yeah, hardly. I think that's such a new story, isn't it? Well, I think it's because he was an icon and he popped up in a sitcom. So that I think that's what caused a stir. I think people know I'm friends with him. You know, I was friends with him. But I think most sensible people know that I had nothing to do with David Barrett. The Fall and Rise of Ziggy was, it's like, no, I think most people know that. But I couldn't believe I knew him. It's weird because he was a hero of mine for 25 years before I met him. And I didn't meet David Bowie, I met David Jones. David Bowie doesn't exist. David Jones is a normal, lovely man from South London who just got incredibly good at something, who was the best at something till the end. I mean, incredible. The integrity, the skill. I mean, he was a... I don't like this term and anything outside science, but he was a musical genius, genuinely so. And he did put my life in colour. And he started every trend there was. It's incredible. But I met a bloke who was nice and normal and talked about pasta and his family. You know what I mean? The first time I met him, I was newly famous. The Office had just gone out on the telly, and I was invited to one of those VIP things at the BBC where they put on the... And it was Bowie. 2001, too. Greg Dyke was in charge of the BBC there, and he'd let out as well that his favourite show of all time was The Office, which I thought, well, that'll annoy everyone else on the BBC, surely. Surely he should have stayed impartial. So he invited me, and me and Jane went along. We saw Bowie. It was incredible. And then the green room after... Greg Dyke bounced over to me. He went, "You're a huge Bowie fan, aren't you?" I went, "Yeah, I've loved him for 25 years, right?" He went, "Do you want to meet him?" I went, He went, "Come and meet him." So he grabs me and Jane walking through. On the way, through getting through the people to go down to Bowie's dressing room, he goes, "Salman." Salman Rushdie joins us. So there's me, Greg Dyke, my girlfriend, and Salman Rushdie. And we go down to the dressing room. Greg Dyke's... David opens the door, he's eating a salad, he went, "Hello, hello, Salman, how are you?" And he goes, this is Rick and Jane, "Hello, how are you? You all right? Yeah, great show, thank you very much." Just really polite, and that was it, that was the end of it. He didn't know who I was, of course he didn't know who I was. I'm sure of it. But next day in the pub, my mate went, "What did you do last night?" And I went, nothing. What could I say? You know, I was, yeah. So about a week later, I get an email from Bowie. He could do that. He was David Bowie. He got my email. And he just said, "The Office. I watched, I laughed. What do I do now?" And we sort of became pen pals. I wish you could swim. Wrote the music to the song in Extras. I did the lyrics and sent them to him, and I called him up and I said, did you get the lyrics? He went, yep, yeah. I said, do some a bit retro, like Life on Mars. And he went, oh yeah, I'll knock off a quick Life on Mars for you, shall I? And I just started laughing. But now I've met my hero and I'm telling him how to do Bowie. Yeah. Bit more Bowie. And he did exactly, he nailed it.
Chubby little loser, chubby little loser, national joke. No, not chubby little loser. No. Pathetic little fat man, no one's bloody laughing. The clown that no one laughs at, they all just wish he'd die.
I remember it was a friend's house of his, old friend's, and he invited me and Jane along. And he'd been in London for a day before. And the night before, by coincidence, I was on Room 101. And Paul Merton obviously showed a little clip of a video of me and Shauna dancing in 1983, right? Singing like David Bowie. And so David walks into the room and he clocked me and he comes and sits down next to me. It's the second time we've met, right? First time, really, if you don't count the dressing room, right? He went, I understand and I owe you an apology. I went, why? He said, seems I've been ripping you off for 30 years. I went, all right, don't start. Everyone was ripping you off. It was 1983. Who was I meant to rip off? And so, yeah, and then he invited me to do Madison Square Garden, and he introduced me, which was his last...
live performance?
Yeah, it was crazy. He just came out with a little harmonica. The crowd went mental. I mean, mental. The noise hurt because it was a surprise. And he just got, he went, chubby little loser, no one's bloody laughing. And he just did the a cappella. And it just, incredible. Magic moment, yeah.
about the day when one of us might fall weak and blindly into another's arms. Demands of gain from jealousies would flow like water, drowning us but leaving us with just another lover's false alarm.
You mentioned Siona Dancing. We can't not talk about More to Lose was the first release.
First and last, nearly.
People are still fascinated by the band and that part of your history.
Yeah, it is odd. And
it's not terrible music. It's not, you know, embarrassing.
And it was over in a flash.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. People only know about that now because I am famous 30 years later for something else.
Yes, but they're still
fascinated. Everyone I know was in a band. How many bands release a single? How many people have that? And now they're teachers, and so they have to say, I was in a band once. We go, all right. But they haven't got those. Their pictures aren't being shown on chat shows around the world. And it always comes up, and people haven't seen them. Yeah. They go, they gasp, right? And I know what they're thinking. They're thinking, what happened? And I tell them what happened. Pizza happened. I had cheekbones. I think I was about 8.5 stone.
You're gorgeous.
Oh, now, okay, this interview is over.
What was the point when you first thought, oh, maybe this isn't the thing for me?
So it was very, very quick. I went to college not to study, but to join a band. I joined a band. We got signed in 2 minutes. We got dropped in 4 minutes. We put out 2 singles that didn't quite make it. By today's standards, I reckon it'd be number one.
It's a long career by today's standards.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you had to sell a lot of singles then. And it was all over. But, you know, it was a terrible thing in retrospect because I thought, easy come, easy go, I'll do it again.
Oh,
and,
okay,
of course, you don't get a second bite of the cherry. But I learned a lesson. I learned a lesson from the Siona Dancing days. I wanted to be a pop star and I should have wanted to be a musician. So when I started this, I knew I wanted to be a writer and a director.
But I feel colder.
This is The First Time on Six Music with my guest, Ricky Gervais, and that was More to Lose from 1983 by Siona Dancing, featuring on vocals Mr. Ricky Gervais.
Six Music. This
is BBC Radio Six Music.
Six Music.
Good times for a change. See, the luck I've had can make a good man turn bad. So please, 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 let me get what I want this time. Haven't had a dream in a long time. See, the life I've had can make a good man bad. So for once in my life, let me get what I want. Lord knows it would be the first time. Lord knows it would be the first time.
I'm Matt Everett, and this is The First Time on Six Music, where we look at the key first musical moments in an artist's life and career. And my guest this week is Ricky Gervais. Ricky, although famous for his comedy work, is a musician, as you can hear in the new David Brent movie. Brent has a band now called Foregone Conclusion. And you just heard Please, Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want by The Smiths, which was used in the Christmas special finale of Ricky's TV series Extras.
I sneak in all my favourite tracks whenever I can.
That's the question.
If I don't write them, if I don't sneak in my own song in, which is obviously usually ironic or daft, I use my favourite song of all time. I've always wanted to use my favourite piece of classical music is Five Variants of Dives and Lazarus by Vaughan Williams. And I said, whenever I do a film, I'm going to use that as the opening. And when I did Cemetery Junction, I used it as the opening.
One of the things about Cemetery Junction is I remember watching it and listening to, there's a Zepp song, a whole full Zepp
Rain song
at the end, and I remember thinking, someone spent a lot of money on getting all of that. That must have been important.
I don't know if I should say how much, but it's more than I've ever paid for a piece of music.
Because,
by tenfold.
Because you don't get a whole song in a film.
It was a lot of money.
But it showed how important that music was to the film.
Yeah, the ending of the film was built around that. I often do that. You know, now I plan things. I plan montages around the music I know, and I get them cleared before I go into it, because there's nothing more disappointing than planning a piece of music and then not being able to get it cleared, which can happen, you know, for any reason. So music is so important to me in movie making and TV. It's nothing as evocative as music. There's no greater art form, and there's nothing as evocative as a piece of music. I don't understand it. I want to understand the psychology and the philosophy of why a chord can make me well up. Why sometimes there's a chord in the Vaughan Williams piece that I feel like I'm going to throw up and cry at the same time, and I don't have that feeling about anything else. I don't know what it is. It's remarkable. It's nearly magical. It's as spiritual and as magical as I get as an atheist. There's nothing like it. That and nature. Music and nature. It's, yeah.
Thank you. ocean. And like the wind, their eyes fall off. This is the wonder of devotion. I see the torch we all must hold. This is the mystery of the quotient quotient.
First track on the Life on the Road album is Ooh La La, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, why?
This is
almost a question for Brent. This is like, why open with that particular sentiment?
Because it's bold, it's derivative, and it's insanely catchy. And it sums up what I said earlier about that, trying to steal that Americana, the British acts that did American, that blues thing. Even like early sort of Rod Stewart doing that. They were very British, but you could see where he got it from, where he got it from America. And then there's that vein. And it's funny that the song's a cracking song. If that was a song by The Faces, it would be great, right? Crossing America, picking up chicks, you know. Sold my shack in Memphis. Now, that's a cliche. Brent doesn't know. He thinks just putting the word shack and Memphis makes it a rock song.
Makes it authentic.
Bought me a Chevrolet, six string in the back and a bottle of Jack, and I headed down to Mexico. Way always going to Mexico in songs. You've always got to be right. So, and as I say, you know, if that wasn't a 55-year-old tampon rep from Slough singing it, you'd think, yeah, cool, good, breezy. It's West Coast meets Brit pop, yeah. But it's the backstory that's funny, and the fantasy that, you know, he picks up this girl. And he has to leave her, and she's gutted, but he has to move on, babe. You know, it's that sort of really weird midlife crisis mixed with adolescent fantasy of you having to let a girl down because she loved you too much. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's infused with arrogance and tragedy.
Sold my shack in Memphis, bought me a Chevrolet. Six string in the back and a bottle of Jack, and I headed down to Mexico way. Singing ooh la la la, ooh la 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 lay, ooh la 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 la. It's a beautiful day. Well, I picked up this señorita. In the golden hay, she said, I do not speak the English. I said, baby, there's nothing that you need to say. I can see that we're going the same way. Singing ooh la la la, ooh la 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 lay, ooh la 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 la. It's a beautiful. Thank you. Acapulco, and we sat in the desert sun. I played my guitar and I smoked a cigar, and I said, this is where I move on. Sure, she cried, but by then I was gone.
You've got some fantastic musicians. What was the first rehearsal like with Foregone Conclusion? It must have been just a joy.
I'd met Andy Burrows once on the Jonathan Ross show. He was with Razorlight and I was plugging the Extras DVD, and he let me write on his arms in indelible marker, Extras DVD out now. And I thought, this guy's cool. He's, you know, he's in the rock band and he's let me write. And then I bumped into him after Equality Street, and I said, I was thinking of doing a few gigs for a laugh. He went, I'm in, leave it with me. And he had his ready-made band. We went on to rehearsal. He'd rehearsed all the songs, and it sounded amazing. I just smiled.
How did it feel?
It felt amazing, because even though it's ironic, it's still actually happening. Do you know what I mean?
There's still actually songs that have been written.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, even in the movie, we're still actually playing. It's like in Jason Bourne, Matt Damon isn't actually punching people in the face, but we are actually playing music and singing. Yeah. That's real. That's actually happening, and it feels amazing, okay? But we did a few gigs, and they went incredibly well. We played the Bloomsbury, and it sold out in seconds, and there was 110,000 ticket requests. And we got a call from Wembley saying you could play Wembley. I was like, hold on, everyone. This is mental.
And then a bit of your voice is going, oh, but...
Well, yeah, of course. But I said, sorry, how is David Brent selling this? How has David Brent got this amazing band? So on stage, I put into the narrative, because I'm always in character, you know, I am David Brent for an hour. I said, oh, these are session guys. I'm not making any money on this gig because they charge. And the people are laughing because they get the narrative. And I thought, that's the idea.
That's it.
He's paying for fame. He's paying for session musicians. He's hiring the venues himself. It's a vanity project. It's one last ditch attempt at being famous, and he's trying to do it the credible way. He's not entering a talent show, and that's what's sweet and sad about it. He's got good intentions. He's not a bad singer. He's not a bad songwriter. It's just all wrong. It's never going to happen for him. It's never going to happen for him. Through no fault of his own, really. He's a 55-year-old tampon rep from Slough.
You get to make that decision about his life, though. You're not going to give him that bit of pleasure, even
you
for a moment.
You can't. I give him small pleasures and small satisfactions, because it's still steeped in realism. You know, it's a fake documentary. And, you know, in real life, you can pay all you want, but he's not going to be a massive rock star, you know? But he's going to find little things along the way. He's going to find some happiness. He's going to find peace. He's going to look for something and find something else and realise that's better. You know, I give him little victories and I give him hope. But everything's small. I try and make the ordinary extraordinary. He can't end up winning a fictional X Factor. He can't. But it does reflect how documentary has changed as well since The Office, because The Office came out and we watched a lot of those quaint docu-soaps in the 90s where an ordinary guy got his 15 minutes and now he's got a DVD to show the kids or whatever, and that's it. But now it's insatiable. Now people demand it more. Now people live their life like an open wound. They do terrible things to be famous. They do nothing to be famous. There's unwritten contracts. They do say, put me on Big Brother and I promise to act like a wild animal for you. And the programme makers go, you promise? Yeah, yeah, okay. And they sort of get rewarded for it if that's what they want. But with that sort of fame doesn't come respect. And that's David Brent's mistake. You know, he thinks fame will sort him out. He thinks popularity will make him happy, and you just got to cut out the middleman. You've got to say, now why am I looking for this? What am I looking for? I don't need to go on Big Brother to find this. There's something I can do where I don't need to go on Big Brother, and that's his mistake. We've had a whole generation of people, you know, why would anyone study to be a doctor when they see someone making 10 million for selling every part of their soul and body, for, you know. So that's Brent's dilemma. He's sort of a nicer person than them. And again, now he's in a room full of people who get on The Apprentice by saying, I would destroy anyone who stands in my way. It's a dog-eat-dog world. It's touched on the film. You know, he's not the boss anymore. He was the boss. He was 39 and Wernham Hogg, but now he's not the boss and he's a ghost and he can't compete in this new world.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
Still a big Radiohead fan?
I think the Benz is probably winning in the most played album of all times now, so taking over, you know. The thing is with the Dylans and the Neil Youngs and the Bowies, I don't play just one of their album forever. I play eight of their albums forever. And the Benz, it's probably the only Radiohead album I play regularly. So as a single album, not as much as all of them put together, but I don't think there's another single album that I've played more now in my life than the Benz. It's a remarkable piece. I don't know why, but as a complete, it's like a greatest hits. And
not a bad moment on it.
Yeah, they Bones. I used to fly like Peter Pan. That makes me cry, that lyric. I used that in Derek as well. Old people were thinking about when they were younger, and it just the thought of it makes me just well up. But yeah, there's not a bad track on it. And like everything I love now, I didn't like at first.
Really?
Yeah, anything could put me off. As you said, I didn't like the Smiths because of the idiots who danced with fake glasses and gladioli sticking out of their back pocket at the student union. I thought, I'm never gonna like that band if they like it. Of course, I'd bother to listen. Love the Smiths. Bowie, I didn't like because the you know people going on about it at school, the idiots were saying stuff. I thought, well, you idiot, what are you talking about? Listen to it. Oh yeah, they're right. Brilliant. And I heard Creep, and I thought, yes, it's all right. It's sort of like crunchy indie, bit wild. But that's the odd one out for me, Creep. But I think the Benz is up there with the greatest albums of all time. I'm fascinated by Tom.
Yeah.
He seems... I don't want to sort of ruin it. He seems very delicate. Mm. You know what I mean? I don't want to go into his headspace and say, how are you? In case it blows something, he was thinking. I know, I sort of think of him as a bit of a genius. I don't want to bother him. I don't want to interrupt Einstein. Do you know what I mean? He goes, E equals... Where was I? Where was I?
Yeah.
ask you a question as Brent? Can I ask you what Brent's greatest influence, his first formative influence, would have been?
Oh, let's have a look. Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because I've got to be in character.
Yeah.
And on radio, without the goatee, it's my voice. It's a bit dangerous. People go, is that Brent or... Well, Brent's my age, so he thinks he might have a bit of Elvis in him. The all-round entertainer. The coolest, greatest all-round entertainer that has ever been. In fact, for the first gig... I got a pair of Elvis sunglasses from New York. I saw them on a junk stall. They were $10, and I wore them for the first ever Brent gig. And it's just a little reference to Elvis. And then he's also got the thin white Duke in there, as he says in the film, a bit of Bublé.
What's his favourite chord, actually?
C major.
Why?
It's the only key I can write in.
Really?
On a piano. I can't do the black notes, so... And on guitar, I just love C, F, A minor, G, because it's the most versatile... I reckon half the songs in the charts are C, F, A minor, G. They're derivative, they're instantly catchy, and you can do a lot with them. When I discovered you can throw in an E minor, woo! Think of that, how that changed my songwriting exponentially.
What's the last song we should play? It can be anything you want.
Letter to Hermione.
Why that song?
It's the most beautiful song, and I haven't been able to listen to it since he went.
Really?
Yeah. Let's do that.
The hand that wrote this letter sweeps the billow clean. So rest your head and read a treasured dream. I care for no one else but you. I tear my soul to cease the pain. I think maybe you feel the same. What can we do? Not quite sure what we're supposed to do. So I've been writing just for you. They say your life is going very well. They say you sparkle like a different girl. But something tells me that you hide. When all the world is warm and tired, you cry a little in the dark. Well, so do I. I'm not quite sure what you're supposed to say, but I can see it's not okay. He makes you laugh, he brings you out in style. He treats you well and makes you up real fine. And when he's strong for you. And when you kiss, it's something new. But did you ever call my name just by mistake? I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to do. So I'll just write some love to you.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
Do. One cigarette and alcohol in your lifetime, if you're lucky.
Straight up bangers, obscure gems, and long forgotten favourites.
Every emotion has a sound to it.
You just gotta do you.
This is Alt 90s on BBC Sounds.
Oh. I never would write like entire lyrics and then try and make music fit around it. That never sounds right to me. It always seems like the music becomes sort of structured, and I think it's easier to bend phrases over music than like to bend chords over words.